closer.
Howdy, and welcome to Wise About Texas, the Texas History Podcast. This is your host, Ken Wise. Thanks so much for tuning in today for a little bit of Texas history. We have had a lot going on here at Wise About Texas World Headquarters. This podcast is being released shortly after the 2024 annual meeting of the Texas State Historical Association. If you're a listener for any length of time, you know that I'm the current president of the Texas State Historical Association. It was a fantastic annual meeting. We had over 600 people. We had sessions in all different aspects of Texas history. We had some African-American history, German history, American Indians, Texas legal history, lots of good programming, getting a ton of feedback that it was one of the better annual meetings that we've ever had, which is great. And we had a big gala at the end. We were in College Station, Texas for the first time on the campus of Texas A&M. We had a gala in the Hall of Champions, Kyle Field, and it was really fantastic. So if you're not a member of the TSHA, you need to join. It is the oldest, founded in 1897, and the largest Texas history organization. We're starting some initiatives to integrate better with all the many historical associations of whatever stripe all across the state. So now's a great time to join. You can go to tshaonline.org and do that. Next year's meeting will be in Houston and should be a great one. It'll be at the end of February, so don't miss out on that. This podcast is being released during what we like to call the high holy days of Texas history, that time period during the Texas Revolution and coming up to San Jacinto. So I wanted to talk today about a little discussed battle during the Texas Revolution that was actually a little bit of a mistake, an unintentional skirmish. So let's go back to 1835 and get wise about Texas. All right, if you'll recall years ago, episode 3 of this podcast, we covered the Battle of Concepcion, which I still think is one of the most underrated battles of the Texas Revolution. It happened in late October 1835 at Mission Concepcion outside of San Antonio, which is still there, by the way, so definitely go see it. Very interesting mission. She had two groups of Texian fighters under the command of James Bowie and James Fannin, and they engaged some of Cos Martin Perfecto de Cos, his best troops, came out of San Antonio to meet him. It was a foggy morning. They almost literally ran into each other, and the Texians won that battle, won it handily, won it fairly quickly. And the reason that I think this battle was important is because it kind of set the tone and gave the Texians an extraordinary amount of confidence. So after that battle, the Texians marched on to San Antonio de Bejar and lay siege to the town. Now that would eventually culminate in the Battle of Bejar, which I covered in episode 6 of the podcast. But before the siege was over, before the battle, there was a little dust-up outside San Antonio that was occasioned by a mistake. So that's what I want to tell you about today. We call it the grass fight. Now, one thing you have to remember about the Texas Revolution, and frankly, the Republic of Texas, is the Republic of Texas was broke during its entire existence. The Revolution was funded largely on loans from interests around the country, but focused in New Orleans. We had two agents over in New Orleans that would try to raise money, borrow money, and finance this revolution. So that was a big problem. Now we're in 1835. This is just starting. The government is in chaos and would largely remain in chaos. And so money was always an issue. And that was the issue the Texians had. The Mexicans had a different issue. They didn't have enough people in Bejar to fight any meaningful battle. So Cos was looking for reinforcements. Reinforcements were on their way, but they'd need an escort to into San Antonio. So Cos sent Colonel Ugarteche, I'm probably not pronouncing that right, to guide these reinforcements in. Of course, the Texians were aware of this. And the commander of the army, if you go back and you listen to the Battle of Concepcion, one of the features, so to speak, of the Texian army / militia was the fact that they would refuse to submit to any commander that they didn't themselves elect. The men were overly democratic, you might say, for a military, and would not accept anybody that they didn't elect. And they would have these elections all the time. So the commanders would change all the time. So you can understand why it was so chaotic. The only guy that they could all agree on back in 1835 was Stephen F. Austin, who probably was one of the least qualified to lead. We had a lot better commanders than that. But anyway, they elected Austin. Well, Austin eventually went to the United States to represent Texas and try to raise support. And so the men elected Edward Burleson, the commander. So he was the commander of the Texians at this time. Burleson was originally from North Carolina. He had fought in the War of 1812. He eventually was a militia captain in Missouri and then was a militia colonel in Tennessee. He came to Texas in 1830 and got his land grant in 1831. He was a member of the town council at San Felipe. He's just got an incredible record in politics and also in the military, and in fact would be named by the provisional government as the commander-in-chief of the army. So that was the Texian commander. I mentioned Coase already. He was the commander of the garrison in San Antonio. Coase was born in Veracruz and was married to Santa Anna's sister, as a matter of fact. So he was Santa Anna's brother-in-law, and Santa Anna expected him to put down the unrest in Texas. So as Ugartechea approached San Antonio, the scouts spotted the Mexican cavalry with the wagon train, and the rumor started flying that maybe these wagons were carrying silver to pay the Mexican army. Now, I've not been able to determine, nor does probably anyone know, how rumors like this get started, but certainly rumors of silver would have gotten the attention of these soldiers, because in military, because the idea of spoils of war was very much a prominent idea at that time. In fact, I did an episode earlier on the spoils of San Jacinto. I can't remember what number that is, but go back and talk, listen to the stories of what the army did with all of Santa Anna's stuff when we won the Battle of San Jacinto. So anyway, the silver got their attention, and Burleson ordered Jim Bowie to go out with some cavalry and try to hold up the cavalry's progress, and then some infantrymen under William Jack would go and capture that supply train. Let me tell you a little something about William Jack, because it's not a name that you hear a lot in the Texas Revolution, but he was part of a family that he had two younger brothers, Spencer Jack and Patrick Jack, and they were all very active in the Texas Revolution. William Jack was from Georgia. He graduated from the University of Georgia, which was then called Franklin College. You'll recall Benjamin Cromwell Franklin has made an appearance in several episodes of this podcast. Father founded the college. He was a lawyer and had begun his practice in Alabama. He married a lady from Alabama, was elected to the Alabama State Legislature. But in 1830, he immigrated to Texas. And about a year and a half later, in 1832, he was a leader in the resistance at Anahuac, as was his brother Patrick. And the Anahuac disturbances resulted in the arrest of Patrick Jack, Monroe Edwards, and William Barrett Travis, which, of course, was a significant spark in the revolutionary fires. By 1835, William Jack was living in Brazoria County. He participated in the capture of Goliad in 1835. Stephen F. Austin promoted him to major. So that was who was commanding the infantry. So the Texian and Mexican cavalry met, and they were fighting west of Bejar near Alazan Creek. Coase had also sent some infantry and a cannon, and Jack's infantry successfully engaged the Mexican infantry and pushed them back. The Mexicans attacked the Texans four different times without success. So William Jack was a pretty crafty commander. In fact, he wrote a letter to Burleson recapping the action, and he described it as this. He had split his troops into two divisions, and here's what he wrote. Quote, "The first division flanked to the right and the second to the left, and in a few moments the ditch and field were cleared of every Mexican except their dead and wounded." Close quote. So Jack was a very effective commander, but it was not enough to drive the Mexican infantry back into San Antonio. That would require reinforcements, and some showed up. These reinforcements were commanded by James Swisher. Swisher was a Tennessean and a land surveyor in Tennessee. He had fought in the War of 1812, also fought in the Battle of New Orleans. He and his brother came to Texas in 1833, and in 1834 had settled in Robertson's colony. And during 1835, they had moved into what would become Washington County. And Burleson had made him a company commander. So he came up with reinforcements and finished the job. The Mexican troops pulled back into the safety of Bejar, and the grass fight was over. But of course, that does not answer the question of why we call it the grass fight. Well, the Texians captured 40 pack animals as part of this battle. And when they brought the animals into camp, they discovered that they were not, in fact, carrying Mexican silver. What they were carrying was grass, forage for the cavalry horses and other animals in Bejar. So while the Texas Army was zealous to go after the Mexican Army under any circumstances, when they thought they were really fixing to make a big score fighting for silver, they actually were just fighting for hay. All right, so let's talk a little bit. The segment of the show I call Getting There. Let me tell you how to go see a couple of places related to the grass fight. Of course, San Antonio de Bejar, always fun to visit. If you like history, San Antonio is definitely one of the best towns to just walk around in. You're going to see it all around you. Don't forget to visit the Alamo. If you haven't seen the new Ralston Family Collection Center, I highly recommend that. There's a Spanish colonial collection there that's just fascinating. Be sure and look for the pistol, the owner of which at some point broke the stock and made his own out of mesquite. It's really a neat item. They got a lot of old guns, a lot of stuff associated with Davy Crockett, some great documents and some great art on the walls. So go check that out. Now, the historical marker for the grass fight is located on the west side of town. It's at the intersection of West Cesar Chavez Boulevard and South Brazos. There's the nearest address is 1501 West Cesar Chavez Boulevard. So if you put that in there, you will find the grass fight marker. Now, it's one of those markers that says near this site. So I'm not sure we know exactly where it happened, but that's going to be close enough. The marker is right next to Lanier High School, and it's west of Alazan Creek that runs through that neighborhood. So you know you're on the right track. Probably not close enough to walk from downtown, but I do encourage you to walk around downtown San Antonio, and you will have more historical markers to read than you can shake a stick at. Well, that wraps it up for another episode of Wise About Texas. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to send your topic ideas to host@wiseabouttexas.com. Always like to hear from listeners. Be sure and like and follow our Facebook page. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Wise About Texas. If you'd like to support the preservation and promotion of Texas history, go to patreon.com/wiseabouttexas. Thanks again for listening. Go out and do something for Texas today. God bless Texas, and we'll see you down the road.